What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, August 5th, 2022. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by my fellow Forbes 30 under 30 friend, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
Tim, how weird does it feel to be in the hosting spot for KFGD and having me be in the passenger seat?
I love it, dude. This is like a fun little thing. We're starting a new thing now where Bless is prepping games daily every day and we just switch off the combination of who's hosting. So I get to host. But I don't even know what I'm reading here. I'm about to go into a whole new world.
I feel like that's dangerous. Even Greg Miller, I know, takes a peek 30 minutes beforehand so he can familiarize himself. I love that as I was building the show, I didn't see your icon pop in the doc once, which means you are truly jumping into this document.
I'm
blind.
Jumping in. Yeah,
and I'm so curious and excited to see how you do.
This man is a professional, Blessing. There's a reason why we let Tim host, because he's the fucking host. Okay.
Now, I don't think we've had this configuration for KFGD since, I think, week one of me being hired.
That's probably true. That's probably true.
When you're hosting.
Because, prepping the show, one of my least favorite things to do. It kind of funny.
Really?
So that's why, if anyone's ever noticed, I am usually in the non-host chair. And if I am in the host chair, that means that everyone else is out and I have to do it. You know?
Funny enough, prepping the show is maybe my favorite thing. I almost like prepping the show more than hosting the show. And so this works perfectly for me because I got all the satisfaction of just surfing the web, reading news, and then getting into my Google Doc space.
That's the best thing, is that I love that there's so many jobs that have to get done here, but everybody likes some things, doesn't like things. There are very few things that are like, oh, this thing just sucks. Like, nobody wants to do that. So it's I get it. I understand the joys of prepping the show. I am just not one of those people, but I do love hosting this because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday we run you through all the video game news that you need to know. Of course, you can get this on youtube.com/kindafunnygames or roosterteeth.com. You can also get it as a podcast by searching your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Games Daily, and we'll be right there for you. You can also watch live on Twitch, twitch.tv/kindafunnygames every single morning at 10 a.m. Pacific, just like Streamer Rig, Pixelated Soul, and Big Head Isaac are doing. Love all of you. Thank you for being here, hanging out with us on this beautiful, beautiful Friday. Today's stories include Beyond Good and Evil 2 getting a lead writer, Square Enix selling stakes in its studios, and more. Remember, you can use the Epic code KINDAFUNNY on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League or Fortnite to help support the channel. To be part of the show, you can go to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free, along with the exclusive daily post show. We got some housekeeping for you, some fun stuff here. A new PS I Love You XOXO is up right now, featuring the homie Jake Baldino. Y'all talk about which PlayStation Studios had the best glow up. I love the thumbnail of PS1 Spyro to Insomniac Spider-Man. It's just like the glow up.
I love it because as we were putting together the headline, part of me was like, I wonder what percentage of the audience understands what we mean when we say glow up, because I know I feel like that's more of a recent term. When I say recent, last 5 years, 4 years. But I was like, you know what, man, it's the internet. People get what you're talking about. People understand. Also, shout out to Jake Baldino. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to express it as much to him yesterday when we recorded, but I wanted to do content with Jake Baldino forever. I used to watch a lot of Game Rank stuff and Jake Baldino. So I joked about I called the show Should You, Would You Buy? It's Before You Buy, right? But I've watched so many of those videos, especially before I worked at Kinda Funny. So getting to actually do a show with Jake Baldino is a nice full circle kind of thing where I'm oh, hell yeah, I used to watch you. Now I'm on content with
you. He's also just lovely to talk with, you know?
Yeah.
He's great. Yeah, no, we got to meet him at a Summer Game Fest, the thing, in July. Mm-hmm. And that was such a fun thing as well. He was down to hang out, and he was really cool to hang out with.
Yeah, I got to make content with him last year at some point, and it was one of those, every once in a while, you do content with somebody, you're like, wait a minute, did we just become best friends? And that was the moment me and Jake had. So great guy. Go check out the new PS I Love You. You can go get it right now on youtube.com/kindafunnygames. Another great bit of housekeeping. Greg's WWE show, This Is Awesome, has a brand new episode out right now. It's the best entrances. I can't wait to watch this. Everyone knows entrances are my favorite thing in the entire world. So I can't wait to see Greg and the boys and girls over there talk about all of that.
What are your top two WWE entrances?
I mean, Shawn Michaels coming in from the zip line is definitely one of them. I pretty much anything John Cena, Triple H, Rey Mysterio, The Undertaker. There's a couple heavy hitters that always go hard.
Chris Jericho's entrance is always one that's burned into my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. Real good. Real good. So go check that out on Peacock. Shout out to our Patreon producers, Fargo Brady, Guy V, and The Saboteur. Today we're brought to you by MeUndies and Chime, but we'll tell you about that later. We do have one more bit of housekeeping that's not on this. Barrett, are you prepped for that, for the new merch?
Oh, yeah.
Let's check out the new merch that you can get right now on roosterteeth.com.
That.
Wow. Whoa.
Look at that. The Kind of Funny Ballers Club t-shirt. You gotta love it. Very Andy Cortez inspired.
I love this.
Mm-hmm.
The beautiful. Ballers Club.
Beautiful. Anyways, again, this isn't a news story, but before we get to the Roper Report and all that stuff, there was some breaking news that just happened, and I am so excited to talk about this with you, Bless, and with the beautiful chat going on right now. Arcade 1-Up finally did the damn thing. Marvel versus Capcom 2 is coming to our houses. I cannot wait for this. This is the arcade machine I have been waiting for. It is coming September 8th. Well, pre-orders are on September 8th. It is Wi-Fi enabled for online play.
Oh, shit.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, that's dope as hell. I didn't know about that.
And on top of that, dude, it features 8 classic titles, including MVC 2, MVC 1, Marvel Super Heroes vs. Street Fighter, X-Men vs. Street Fighter, Jesus. Marvel Super Heroes, X-Men Children of the Atom, X-Men Mutant Apocalypse, and Marvel Super Heroes in War of the Gems. Hell yeah, man.
Wait, X-Men Mutant Apocalypse is on this one?
Yeah, dude.
That's dope as hell. And honestly, I'm more excited for you, right? Because I'm hopefully, if you get this, I'm going to get to go over to your place and play.
Exactly.
There's no way in hell, like right now where I'm at in my life, I'm not going to get this arcade machine. I do not have space in my San Francisco apartment, but Tim Geddes might have space somewhere in that theater you're sitting in. And so like, hell yeah, I need you to get this so I can play it.
I think I need to get this. The problem for me, and this is such a Tim Geddes problem, is I want this series of games, but I want the cabinet of Marvel versus Capcom 1. Because the cabinet for this one, kind of weak. I love Spider-Man's pose here, and I love him versus Ryu kind of facing off. But I do not understand how they had the dopest side cabinet for MVC 1 of all time, where you just see all of the characters together, and like one side, either Marvel or Capcom, are highlighted, depending on the left or right. It's a thing of beauty. I don't know. Barrett, you can try to find what I'm talking about throughout the show and bring it up later.
The MVC 1 cabinet, you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Hear me out, Tim, right? Like, I get what you're talking about. You know, I do think this thing looks hideous, but it would look great at the Kind of Funny studio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like this would be a great studio installation. Let's keep it out of your house. You know, your house is precious. Your house is just sanctum. You don't want to ruin it. But in the studio, right? Like, just do that. I feel like that would be good.
Tim, is this the one you're talking about?
This is the one I'm talking about. Look at that, where it's the Marvel side's in color, and then the Capcom's black and white. And then on the flip side of the machine, it's the opposite.
Now, come on. Man. Is Tim all robotic-y for you?
Yeah, he did get all robotic-y for me really quick. But the hype did come through.
The hype did come through.
His good. Love for this arcade machine did come
Tim's
through.
I think Tim's good now.
Yeah.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back. And then, back at it like a bad habit. And then, hold on. Yeah, you're back at it like a bad habit. Let me show the other side, too, to show off. Like, yeah, they're in color here, and then the Marvel's in black and white on this side. That's really cool.
Oh, that's sick as hell.
Oh. So if someone out there knows how to mod shit for me, let's make that happen. All right? I want MVC 2 and all those games, but I wanted that machine. Anyways, enough of all of that. Let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. We have 7 stories today.
Gonna take you for a ride, a baker's dozen.
I definitely think I'm having some robot issues. So what I'm going to do, y'all, Bless, you and Barrett, have a fun time for a sec. I am going to restart my internet. It should only take a minute. Bye.
Tim does that. We're going to start with story number 1. 6 years after its announcement, Beyond Good and Evil 2 hires its lead writer. This is Casey David Weir Taylor at IGN. It's been several years since Beyond Good and Evil 2 was officially announced. After a lack of news for quite some time, there's finally a new development for the long-awaited game. They've hired their lead writer. In a tweet yesterday, Sarah Arellano announced that she was joining as the game's lead writer. Arellano previously worked as narrative designer for Blizzard on World of Warcraft and at Volition, the studio responsible for Saints Row. Beyond Good and Evil 2 was officially announced in 2017 at E3. The game will serve as a prequel to the original game, with promises of being able to explore alone or with friends in its massive and ambitious world. Beyond that announcement, there's not been a lot of meaningful news since. We've gotten a look at some of the cool concept art and another look at the game at E3 in 2018. That last time we saw the game gave us a glimpse at Jade from the first game, seemingly as a villain. Ubisoft initially planned for a beta of the game to be available at the end of 2019, but that never came to fruition. Beyond Good and Evil 2 also lost its director in 2020, leaving the game's status even more up in the air. Since then, the game got a mention in Ubisoft's earning reports, confirming it is still around in some capacity. Then, earlier this year, a report came out saying that the game was still in pre-production. The news of the game getting its lead writer, however, is a good step forward. Barrett Courtney, I feel like I get to talk to Tim all the time about Ubisoft, and for some reason, the Ubisoft stories chase us on the show.
It's like when NFTs follow Tam for whatever reason.
100%. Barrett, I know you're somebody who also pays attention to Ubisoft, and to some extent, I think you pay attention to Beyond Good and Evil. Is that right?
Enough, you know, just like as any other jabroni out there, right? Like they announced it in the era where the Vivendi takeover was looming over them, and they were like, "Oh, we got to announce things so we can keep over ownership of this company because you know it should definitely stay in the Guillemont family for whatever reason." This is insane. This is, and I think it was yesterday, right? People were like, it's a real game. Someone in, we were talking about Beyond Good and Evil 2. I forget if I was on Games Daily or like on the Twitch stream. Yeah, it was on KFGD. And people in the chat were like, it's real. They're beta testing. Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, they just hired a writer 5 years after the game's announced, 2 years after they lost the director. This is not a real game right now. You know, there's an engine probably. They're character models. But if you don't even have a writer, a lead writer, giving you a story, like what are you making right now?
Yeah, I guess my question is, what have they been doing for the last 5 years? You know, I like video game development, of course, as we all know, is hard, right? There's always the back and forth of like, when do you announce a game? When is too early to announce a game? When is too late to announce a game, right? Like, how transparent should you be? And we've been getting a lot of different examples, I feel like, across the board of different ways to approach it. And it's been fascinating for me to sit and watch and see some people nail it, some people try with it. For me, the latest example has been with Skate, where Skate has been very transparent in terms of, hey, we're announcing the next Skate game. We want to make it with you, the audience, because the audience cares so deeply about what this thing is, right? And there's this attachment to it. So we want to make it alongside you to make sure that it is what you want it to be. That has then come with them also showing off the, like, basically wireframe footage, right? Of, hey, these are the early alphas. Cool. Here are some closed alphas that we'll get the audience involved in. But that then leads to things like the alphas getting cracked, and then all of a sudden, that stuff is open to everybody to jump into, and people are throwing out demands left and right in terms of, oh, man, I like the jankiness of how this Skate game looks. Keep in the jank. And people being like, dude, this game is an alpha. Like, no, we're not going to keep in the jank. This is just part of the process. This is what game development looks like, right? I think so much of that stuff is difficult because there is this, I guess, illiteracy for a lack of a better term, of what game development looks like in the process for a large amount of the audience. And so for them to announce Beyond Good and Evil 2 so early, that is one, ballsy. And I think does come with, hey, we're fighting off of Vivendi, we're Ubisoft that's fighting for our lives. We're making a lot of good decisions, but also we are throwing shit at the wall and hoping it sticks. And yeah, like for them to announce it this early and do the thing of, hey, let's make it alongside you. Let's be transparent. Let's give you development updates. And then also let's do the weird Joseph Gordon-Levitt thing and have the hit record.
That's what they've been working on the last 5 years, getting all the art assets for JGL, you know.
They've been gathering the Avengers of creators to work under JGL, who will be their Iron Man, to create the game for them. Yeah, like there's been a lot of, I guess, weirdness and just interesting tidbits as far as what the fuck and how the fuck are you making this game? But for the fact that we're 5 years after the announcement of this game and they're just hiring the lead writer, I'm like, all right, what does that say about when this game is going to come out? Like, Tim, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, dude, this is so interesting because it's funny that you even say like 5 years after the announcement of this game. Like, a lot of people forget this game was first announced in a different form in, what, 2008? I want to say, like, Beyond Good and Evil was a Zelda-like game that hit hard on the GameCube, PS2, Xbox generation to a very niche audience, right? But it was one of those cult classic type games where the people that played it were like, yo, this is really good. This has great characters. The story was really fun. And the gameplay backed it up in a time that Zelda likes weren't that common. We had Wind Waker. We had, you know, the Zelda itself, right? But then we also had Okami. coming up soon. But besides that, it was like, this was just like a fun breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. And the people that played it loved it. But then when they announced the sequel, it was really exciting because it seemed like, oh, they were like going to up the ante and give us a lot more of what we, the people that played the first one, loved. And then when that eventually got scrapped after the first trailer they put out, like, do you remember what I'm talking about, Les? Where it's like they're on the side of the road, like they pull over a truck.
Very vaguely. I think I've seen that. I've watched that trailer through once, but I was never a Beyond Good and Evil fan. And so I never cared too deeply about it, but I always like knew that there were people that fucking went crazy for Beyond Good and Evil too.
Yeah, I was one of those people. I was really excited back then that they were going to do it. And then as the years went on, it kind of was like, all right, cool. I don't think this game's ever actually going to happen. I think actually that might have been the same E3 that Agent was shown.
Oh, if I remember correctly. That would have been early 2010s. What a E3 that would have been then.
Yeah, Agent was like 2009, 2010, I think.
Because Agent would have been one that I did pop for because I love me some Rockstar and I love me some fucking Secret Agent shit. And yeah. PlayStation exclusives.
Let us know in the chat when they did show Beyond Good and Evil, when they showed Agent.
Agent was July 2007. It was teased in 2007 and formally announced in 2009.
Okay.
Okay. Damn. When was Beyond Good and Evil 2, though?
I'll look into that.
2008 is Michael R. O'Leary says. But yeah, so then we flash forward from that and they re-announced the game. That was exciting just because it's like, oh my God, they bring it back an old game. But then immediately I remember being like, I'm sure you can find me live on camera reacting to it, being like, this isn't Beyond Good and Evil. Like it kind of is in the same world, but like, this is not at all what the fans of the first game were expecting for the second.
It's like when they announced Prey again, like Prey 2.
Totally.
And exactly. You're like, oh, this isn't Prey 2, but all right, this looks cool.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, interesting. And then we kind of got a little bit more throughout the years of what it is. We saw that trailer, and then they're like, oh, no, hey, Jade's here, and we are actually giving you some of the story bits, but it was still like, this is confusing. I don't understand how this all works. And then they really started focusing on the whole building it with you, and this is going to be this giant game. Like, it's going to be genre-defining and super different. It's like, I don't know that anyone was looking for that from Beyond Good and Evil, and now we're in this weird place where, to be completely honest, I can't imagine people being excited for this game, whether or not it exists, because what they're showing us is very like cool, but that's not Beyond Good and Evil. Like what they're showing, I can imagine people being excited for potentially, but in a world filled with Anthems and Fallout 76s, I don't know that what they've shown at this point 5 years ago for Beyond Good and Evil 2 is worth getting excited about.
So then I got two questions for you then. One, does the game getting a lead writer do anything for your hope for the game? And then two, what do they need to do with Beyond Good and Evil 2 to actually make it hit?
I mean, that's such a layered question, because first off, does it getting a lead writer excite me or give me hope? Absolutely not. They should have had a lead writer. Like if they had, let me put it this way. If they had a lead writer for the past 6 years, that still wouldn't have given me hope. That's just an expectation.
No, that's fair.
Right? So the fact that they don't, it's like, oh, okay. So this is just really bad news. What could Beyond Good and Evil 2 do to get people excited? I don't know, because let's remember, the first game wasn't this massive hit. It was like a cult classic. So it already is kind of a weird thing. They even remastered the game and put it out, and like, it didn't hit then. You know what I mean? It's not like people are like, oh my God, we all missed out on this amazing classic game. Again, I loved the game when it first came out. I was definitely one of the supporters of it. Like, I was one of those people that was like, yo, y'all need to play this. I remember I lent my copy to multiple of my friends to be like, you're going to love this game. And they all did. I don't know that it holds up anymore. You know, I don't know that it has that secret sauce. I haven't played it in at least a decade at this point. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know that. Go for it.
Funny enough, like, I feel like I would be more excited for this game if it had less scope. You know, like you talk 100%. About them announcing it, you know, showing it off, and it felt like this grand thing when they showed it off in 2017. Hey, we're gonna make it with you. Hey, look at what it looks like in development. You're gonna be traveling through space, yada yada, all this stuff. If it was this is gonna be a smaller in scope Ubisoft game that we are treating almost in the way that EA treats their indie games. I forget what they actually call them, but like the It Takes Two's of the world, right? Mm-hmm. We're giving this to a smaller team to put their heart and soul into to make a cool Zelda-like. Because even to this day, we don't get many classic Zelda-like games, right? In the Ocarina of Time or Wind Waker styles, mm-hmm. right? Those are still few and far between. I think Ubisoft having a smaller team work on a game like that would be a hit with the audience and would satiate that cult following that Beyond Good and Evil has. Like, I don't see Beyond Good and Evil 2 needing to be this thing that gets all the budget thrown at it and is crazy in scope and is, you know, going to be this life-changing game. It's like, no, just put out a Beyond Good and Evil 2 that has the heart and that has fun gameplay, make it 10 hours long and call it a day.
I mean, dude, yeah. I mean, you're right. You just won me over because that is something that would get me excited, especially with how good this looks. Like, come on. Like, this is absolutely gorgeous. But that is the weird push and pull where I feel like for a smaller title to hit right, it would need a budget that's higher than like a smaller indie game. And I don't know. It'd be a tall order for them to be able to pull it off. But I do think that we have seen so much kind of retro revival for different genres. Like, we've gone through the years now of getting a bazillion 2D platformers. We got a bazillion SNES style RPGs. I think that we're now kind of getting to that era of getting more 3D platformers and things that are more akin to the N64 era of 3D gaming. But where is that the Zelda likes, right? We've gotten a couple of them, but I do think that we can get more. It's a tried and true genre that millions of people love. So that could be interesting, but I just don't see them doing that. And again, this for the upteenth time that we're talking about this, Ubisoft is in a weird place right now, and I don't know how they're going to get out of it.
We'll see.
Yes, we absolutely will. Story number two. Square Enix is looking to sell stakes in its studios. This comes from Chris Scullion at VGC. Square Enix wants to sell stakes in some of its development studios to improve capital efficiency, it's reported. The publisher held a conference call on Friday to discuss its most recent financial results, and following the call, Japan-based analyst David Gibson took to Twitter to summarize its plans. According to Gibson, the sale of Crystal Dynamics and Eidos to Embracer Group was phase one of Square Enix's plans, and phase two will be diversification of studio capital structure. Rising development cost of making games means with 100% owned studios, they need to be selective and concentrate resources, which limits expansion, Gibson wrote. As such, the publisher will be doing a studio portfolio review. Some studios will remain 100%, while others will change equity method or joint venture, adding that Square Enix will also look to expand the studio portfolio. According to Gibson's reporting on the call, the biggest impact is on the EU and US studios around large titles, and that the changes mean Square Enix will be able to allocate resources mainly to Japan titles. So Square Enix is looking to sell stakes in its studios to others to improve capital efficiency. I would expect Sony, Tencent, Nexon, etc. would be interested. Gibson also noted, in his estimation, Square Enix's decision to extraordinary because the publisher should have more than enough money to meet its needs without having to sell stakes in its existing studios. Square Enix capitalized game dev costs are currently running at $840 million, but post the Crystal Eidos sale, the company will have $1.4 billion in cash and zero debt, which is plenty to fund expanded game investment and not sell down stakes in its studios. Mm-hmm. Following the conference call, the publisher's share price rose, and at the time of writing is currently 11% higher than its price when the market closed yesterday.
Corporate speak, man.
Mm-hmm.
Whole improved bunch capital there. Efficiency.
Yeah, motherfuckers dropped the word extraordinary. Like, in a weird way.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. David Gibson's point here, right, talking about how Square Enix doesn't need to do this. Like, they have money to expand if they want to, but for whatever reason they are selling off these stakes, and they felt it was needed to sell off Crystal Dynamics and Eidos Montreal. Like, I think it's all confusing aside from the reasoning of, oh yeah, they're just building up their price so that they can sell off to a Sony or they can sell off to a bigger publisher.
Yeah. And I feel like that is inevitable at some point. Like, there's so many signs, especially with Sony. The thing that's always kind of thrown me off, though, is Square's relationship with Nintendo and with the Switch in particular. They've been very supportive of that system. And with the amount of hardware in the wild for the Switch, it is hard for me to wrap my head around them not making Switch games anymore, because they, like, think about the profile of titles that they've put out on the Switch, right? We're getting multiple Square titles a year, in addition to ports and different versions of older games as well. So what that would look like, even if they did sell to a PlayStation, would they still do that? We've seen that happen before, so it's not unprecedented, but I don't know. But yeah, definitely this does kind of read that they are trying to bulk up their value to be able to sell higher.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder what a Square Enix looks like under another huge corporation. You know, I think when it comes to being bought by Sony, for example, I think there's kind of a clear path you see. But yeah, for the point you just made, Square Enix has such a presence on other platforms, especially the Switch, right? Like, I'm coming off of playing Live Alive and absolutely loving that game. Earlier in the year, they published Triangle Strategy, right? Later in the year, they're publishing Harvestella? Yeah, Harvestella, right? And then, like, you know, Square Enix, big publisher, like, that doesn't even encompass all of what they're publishing across all platforms. Even this year, they're publishing Valkyrie Elysium. Sometime in the winter, you're going to get Final Fantasy Crisis Core, and that's coming to all platforms. And then next year, you are going to have Forspoken and Final Fantasy VII Remake, or no, sorry, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth coming to PlayStation exclusive, right? Like, one, that's a lot of games, but then also that's a lot of partnerships, and Square Enix as a publisher are in a more powerful place, I'd say, right? They aren't in a Ubisoft situation where Ubisoft has had a turbulent quite a few years, right, where, you know, they put out Ghost Recon Breakpoint, and that was their breaking point in terms of, ah, shit, we got to readjust. Like, let's delay Immortals Fenyx Rising. Let's delay Rainbow Six Extraction. Let's figure out what we want to do, and them still being in that process of figuring out what they want to do. Square Enix, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Tim. I feel like they're on a great roll, right? Like, they've put out Final Fantasy VII Remake, which did really great, like, won Game of the Year awards, and they are capitalizing off of that in what seems like a very consistent way between Final Fantasy VII ports for mobile, and then also the games that I mentioned that are coming out on cross platforms, and then also, again, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, right? Let alone 16, let alone Forspoken, let alone all the JRPGs I just mentioned. Is there something that I'm not seeing in the tea leaves here, Tim?
Well, it's not all mega wins, right? There was Strangers of Paradise, you know, there was Avengers, sure. There's all the Western side of things that they've now kind of gotten
Babylon's
rid of.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, it's not all perfect. And like, when you kind of look at the future, it's like, you know, being completely real, although I'm excited for Forspoken, there is a pretty high chance that that ends up more Babylon's Fall than Final Fantasy VII Remake in terms of quality, right? And in terms of how much love it gets from the audience. So I don't think that they're in the best shape of their lives, but I do think that it's positive momentum for sure. We have Kingdom Hearts 4 coming eventually as well, so it's like there's a lot going on. But I do think that this story is kind of just interesting to kind of note for the future, where in 2 years where are we going to be, and where's Square going to be. But what makes Square interesting is that its highest profile games are already exclusively tied to PlayStation. So at some point, I question, what is the value of PlayStation fully acquiring them when they're already getting the goods, you know?
Yeah. And I guess in that case, for PlayStation, it would probably be Control and making all the money off of those sales, right? Because, like, at this point, even with the partnership, there is a split that you are splitting with Square Enix. If, as PlayStation, you are making all that revenue, I'm sure there's something there that's nice. But then you also look at Final Fantasy 14, which is one of Square's biggest games right now. And that's one that I can kind of go both ways with, in terms of, I think part of why that game's so successful and popular is because it is cross-platform, right? It is everywhere. But also, I guess if you are PlayStation, if you're PlayStation, by Square Enix, you still allow Final Fantasy 14 to be everywhere in the way that Minecraft is still everywhere, even though it's owned by Xbox. I think it is one of those that has that. Mm-hmm. But then if you are able to push the PlayStation and PC versions as the, hey, these are the versions you want to get specifically, because PlayStation will have exclusive costumes, exclusive content, partnerships, whatever that makes that version shine, then yeah, I could see that being a viable avenue for that game. And I think that could make sense as something that you'd want as PlayStation, especially a PlayStation that is looking to expand your multiplayer and ongoing service portfolio, especially after buying Bungie and all that. Like, I think there's something there with Final Fantasy 14 that could make them seem very valuable to them. I guess 14 isn't on Xbox, is it?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, that's the thing. Is I you're so right. I see the value. I totally get it. A lot of people in chat are saying, like, oh, this, like, what Tim's saying is exactly what people said about Insomniac. Insomniac and Square are completely different conversations, and everyone, y'all know that, right? Square is much bigger. They have multiple development studios, like many. Insomniac does too, but they're limited to, like, less than five, right? Where Square has, what, upwards of 10, 15? Like, they're putting out so many different games. So it's like, it's a completely different conversation. And right now, PlayStation's able to pay the licensing fees for the biggest heavier hitter titles that they're trying to push. Mainly Final Fantasy VII Remake is what I'm talking about. But and then Final Fantasy 16 as well, which we didn't even bring up.
Yeah.
That's coming soon. So very interesting stuff. But Remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
No one. And The Rock means no one likes waiting on a paycheck. Especially, ladies and gentlemen, when you've got bills due. Good thing there's now Chime. Now you can get your paycheck up to 2 days early with direct deposit. That's up to 2 more days to save, pay bills, and generally just feel good about your money situation. Waiting for your money, never good. Getting your money in advance, great. Who wouldn't want that? Chime is more than about just getting paid early. It's also an award-winning mobile app, checking account, debit card, and optional savings account. So what are you waiting for? Hopefully not your paycheck. Get started with Chime today. Applying for a free account takes less than 2 minutes. Get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Early access to direct deposit funds depends on the payer. Where'd the sunglasses go? Chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Have you heard about the legendary underwear brand that's taken the podcast world by storm? Famous for their buttery soft undies and bralettes, MeUndies loves podcasts just as much as you do. It's like they're made for you, and you're made for them. You're made for each other. Now, of course, ladies and gentlemen, you know I love my MeUndies because they're the most comfortable underwear I've ever had, and because they have great patterns. As the king of Halloween, my candy corn pair never fails to make me smile. Everyone knows MeUndies for their super soft undies and comfy bralettes, but did you know they also make other stuff? We're talking about durable, cushy socks that will make your feet sing. They even make hoodies for your dog so you can match every important person in your life. Available in sizes XS to 4XL and tons of colors and prints, MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. Any first-time purchasers can get 20% off plus free shipping and returns. To get 20% off your first order, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny.
Story number 3. A Mario Kart 8 Deluxe music data mine may have revealed future DLC circuits. This comes from Jordan Midler at VGC. Placeholder music files found in the latest Mario Kart 8 Deluxe update may have been revealed. Some of the circuits coming in the game in the future, as discovered by YouTube user Record Reader, and posted to YouTube by BL, it appears that several prefetch files were added to the game, which correspond to music tracks from classic Mario Kart games. They contain the first few seconds of a piece of music. They're designed to start the music quickly while the actual full song loads in the background. While the full music tracks that correspond with the prefetch files don't appear to be present in the new update, they have been provided. They provided enough of each song to let Mario Kart fans figure out which circuits they relate to. I love this. That's so cool. I would love to. I don't know Mario Kart music well enough, but like, I would love the idea of listening to this and trying to guess.
Oh yeah, that's a Bless Who game right there.
Yeah,
I listened to the first five. Oh, actually, now that I say it out loud, listen to the first 5 seconds of the soundtrack. Figure out the game. Look forward to that soon.
I love that. If I don't crush everyone on that one, there's no hope for me. The ones that have appeared are London Loop from Mario Kart Tour, Peach Gardens from DS, Blue Lake and Broken Pier from GBA. Oh, I love that one. Rock Rock Mountain on 3DS, Berlin Byways from Tour, Waluigi Stadium and Wario Coliseum from GameCube. Hell yes. Merry Mountain, Rainbow Road from 3DS, Amsterdam Drift from Tour, Singapore Speedway from Tour. Amsterdam Drift. Which Fast and Furious going to get there, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah, right.
We have Singapore Speedway from Tour, Los Angeles Laps from Tour, Sunset Wilds from GBA, Bangkok Rush from Tour, Vancouver Velocity from Tour, and Maple Treeway from
Wii. I got questions. Wow. I'll let you finish the story, but I got questions about those.
Only one from the Wii. That's insane.
It's none from like the FCC4.
Yeah.
Which fucks me up. And what are you about to talk shit about the Wii Mario Kart Bear? Is that where you're about to go?
It was almost like the Mario Kart Wii is the worst modern Mario Kart, you know?
Wow. I also feel like a lot of the Wii tracks are already in the core.
I mean, yeah, because they're so good.
Mario Kart 8.
Get ahead of it. Let's get all these tracks.
However, a previous data mine uncovered the retro prefixes for future circuits are based on these, and most likely outcome is that the first 8 tracks listed above will be in Wave 3 since the prefixes match. This doesn't seem to be all of them. Like, just doing the math on this, it seems like we're still missing some some tracks, if I'm doing my math correctly.
Yeah,
well, there's like, 8 waves, right?
Yeah, and there's 15 tracks in here. So there's like, even in the second wave that this lists, like one of those tracks is missing, you know?
Yeah, so this seems like primarily just wave three. Or whatever the next DLC.
Some of these have two listed per thing, like Waluigi Stadium and Wario Coliseum.
Oh, right. And then Boo Lake and Broken Pier. That's a good point. So, yeah, it's like 17 tracks. So that's the next wave and a bit of the wave after that.
Did Waluigi Stadium and Wario Coliseum for GameCube, did those share the same soundtrack, though? Because that might just be a guess of, oh, it's going to be one of those.
That's smart. That's really, 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 really. We got smart boys here. Smart boys, everybody.
We'll only hire smart boys here. The other thing I was going to mention, Mario Kart Tour, right? You go through these tracks. You got London Loop. You got Amsterdam Drift. You got Singapore Speedway, Los Angeles Laps, and Vancouver Velocity.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, are all the tracks in Tour based off of real world locations?
Yes and no, because like there's New Donk City, which like that's it's a real New York. But yeah. But you know what I mean?
Isn't there also a New York location? I think there's a New York track, right?
Kind of. Let me bring up the.
There's a couple that aren't real world locations, but most of them are.
But so. And also, is this the only Mario game that crosses over with the real world? Because I don't recall that happening.
Blast. Oh, you're right.
You're right. Because I'm curious on what this means canonically for Mario.
Yes.
So are you telling me that there's a New Donk City and a New York City?
Yes.
In the Mario world.
I don't know, man.
Because that's kind of fucked up. Like, yeah. One of them is appropriating the other.
And that's, kind of a whole point, blessing you're asking, of, like, most of the tour tracks. Like, yeah, it's, like, a, kind of a world tour vibe. And so far, all of the tracks that have been added to Mario Kart 8 from Tour, I believe, are also, like, city-based ones. Because there's, like, one that seems to be based off of Paris. Hold on, let me bring it up here. So, yeah, we got
Paris Promenade.
Paris Promenade. Yeah, Paris Lily.
We have just around his head.
Tokyo Blur. New York Minute. And then Sydney Sprint. So, yeah, they're all, like, based off of real locations. And honestly, it's one of those weird things where it's, like, Mario Kart Tour in and of itself as a game, like on mobile and stuff, not really interested in. But when they come to Mario Kart 8 and like when we like play them, like we streamed them yesterday and stuff, like I do get really into them just because of the design of them, of like how they kind of like change the course every lap almost and stuff like that. Like I really enjoy them. So it is a weird choice to really lean heavily on Tour, especially what it seems to be in these next couple of waves. But I'm not terribly mad at it. Would I rather there be more 64 courses here than Mario Kart Tour? 100%. But
yeah. And I get it. Like, you know, I think those tour courses would go on to become underappreciated if they weren't making their way into Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. And so I do like the choice. But yeah, I'm with you that I wish there was a bit more. Hey, let's bring in some of the other tracks that are fan favorites as well. And then also, you're wrong me, right? There are some tour tracks that aren't based off of real world. Like even Ninja Hideaway was in the Wave 1, and that's just the Ninja Hideout, which is really cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Ninja Hideaway was an original one, was it not? Because it's not listed as a tour.
No, that was
Tour.
I thought it was a tour one.
Oh, that's weird. That is Tour. It's not listed as a tour game, which is weird. And the other ones are.
Oh, people are saying in the chat, they're saying it's original? Really? What? Yeah.
Oh, I thought that, because wasn't there one from the latest wave that people were saying was like the first original one? Hold on. Ninja Hideaway. Okay, well, people
are not original. No, it's from Tour. There's no new original tracks in these waves. They're all from different games.
Yeah, Sky High Sunday. Sky High Sunday is technically original, quote unquote, but that they like subtly were like, it's coming to Tour later. So it's definitely like a track that was designed for Tour, and then they were like, hey, we might as well put it in this DLC.
Here's the question I have, though. Like, we're complaining that it's Tour, but like, what are there tracks that we're like, oh man, I can't believe they don't have this yet? Because I feel
every 64 satisfied. Course.
Yeah, I was gonna say I was just typing it in. N64 course list Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Because like, do they have the Wario stage from Mario 64? That was one of my favorite ones.
What was it? Yeah, I think that's just Mario Kart. What was that? Wario.
It's like Wario Speedway, I think. Here we go.
Wario Stadium, yeah, that's a classic one. I would love. I think we have a version of DK's Jungle Parkway, but I love the design of that one. I like the OG Bowser's Castle or the N64 Bowser's Castle. That's a cool. That's
that's a really good one. We got Moo Farm.
We have Toad's Turnpike. We have, I think, the Wii version of Moo Moo Farm. We got
all the ones that matter.
We got Choco Mountain, which is not discontinued.
We do have Yoshi's Valley, but Choco. I want them to bring back.
Close.
Thank you.
I want them to bring back for Yoshi's Valley, and this is something that obsessed me because this was the cool thing about Yoshi's Valley, right, Tim? There's all these different ways that you could go. And then, like, the way that they list, like, you'd usually see, like, who's in first, who's in second, who's in third, and stuff like that. But in the N64 version, they wouldn't tell you. It'd all be question marks because you're all going different ways and stuff. So you don't really know until, like, you finish it, right? And so, but they don't do that for the modern one. I just want them to bring that back. Also, you know, shout out to Sherbert Land. When they announced the Penguin GBA track for this wave, I was a little sad that it wasn't Sherbert Land.
Is Sherbert Land, is that the one where you're on ice and there's, like, you go into the cave and the penguins will fuck you up?
Yeah.
I know that's a weird description for people who not play Mario Kart.
Yeah.
But it's accurate.
Yes.
I like that one.
Story number four. Xbox Series S games could potentially see improved performance. This comes from Tom Warren at The Verge. Microsoft's giving Xbox Series S game developers more control over memory on the console. A new software development kit has been released to developers recently, and it frees up more memory for developers to access for Xbox Series S games and boost performance in certain titles. Quote, hundreds of additional megabytes of memory are now available to Xbox Series S developers. This gives developers more control over memory, which can improve graphics performance in memory-constrained conditions. Microsoft's banana improvements.
That wasn't me. Was not me.
Gotcha,
was that
Barrett?
That was
Barrett. That's what you get for don't read the stories ahead of time, Tim.
That was really good. Holy shit.
Microsoft's banana improvements, albeit small, could help reduce some of that friction developing games for the Xbox Series S.
God, I hope their bananas improve so much.
Honestly, I didn't catch it for a second. I was like, banana improvement? That's a weird way to put it, which I'm sure is the same thing that went through Tim's mind until he realized.
I want to let you know, immediately, as I said it, as it was leaving my mouth, I want y'all to know that as I was reading that story, in the back of my mind, I was proud of myself. I'm like, I was cutting out words that weren't necessary. I was like, oh no, I'm jumping between the quotes, not having to say all the says Microsoft's game dev in a team video. I was like, no, cutting that shit out, feeling myself. And then I hit that banana hard, man. I hit that thing.
You hit it like a
fell in my butt.
Like a Mario Kart level, man. You hit that banana. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is really great. Yeah, very good news. Awesome. Gotta love it. Hundreds more megabytes of memory. I'm sure those developers are going to make use of all of it. You know what I mean? Get that Series S going. But again, shout out to Xbox. They've created this ecosystem. They have the multiple SKUs for it. They're committed to making this a bigger and better experience for everybody. And I love that the Series S is as big of a success as it is.
Yeah, I like that the Series S doesn't feel like an afterthought, because I think that's the big fear when it comes to releasing a marginally less powerful version of the console, especially at the get-go. Oh, all right, are the games going to run shittily on this thing? Is it going to stop getting support? The fact that they're unlocking some extra memory for devs to use to make games a little bit more pretty or powerful, whatever the functionality might be there, is really great. And yeah, the fact that they're paying attention to it at all, honestly, like that they're constantly trying to find ways to make the S viable and cool. It's awesome. And yeah, like the S is very popular because it is a less expensive version of the console. And like seeing how many people have gotten access to the S and actually do own an S, like I have an Xbox Series S in the other room that Michael Hyam uses. And I'm like, oh shit, this thing is actually a thing, right? It didn't come out and totally just like get lost in the shuffle. Good for them.
Mm-hmm. Story number five, Multiverses is getting a big overhaul of its hit detection system. This comes from Chris Scullion at VGC. Multiverses hit detection will be getting a big overhaul, the game director confirmed today. Tony Huynh tweeted about a new online-only update that had been added to the game, which fixed bugs affecting certain moves for Jake and Tom and Jerry. One follower replied asking if Finn would be getting a nerf in the future, claiming his move seemed to break through opponents' defenses too easily. Wood replied, "We're looking at Finn in sections. We're working on a big overhaul of our hitbox and hurtbox system, so don't want too many moving parts. A hitbox, for those that don't know, is an invisible box that is created when a character performs an attack and shows the range of space the attack covers. A hurtbox is another invisible box which sits on top of a character and determines where they can be hit. If a character performs an attack and their hitbox overlaps the opponent's hurtbox, the attack lands. An overhaul to the hitbox and hurtbox system, then, such as the one being planned for multiverses, could make it either easier or harder to hit opponents depending on how the boxes are altered." Cool.
I love this. Mm-hmm. When I did the original preview for multiverses, this was probably my biggest qualm with it. You know, I think for me it was the game feel, and a lot of that comes down to hitboxes and hurtboxes and how that stuff registered. A lot of the times I felt like it just didn't feel right, right? And like in a game like this where, I mean, it's a fighting game, right? Like you want that to feel as accurate and as tight as possible. The fact that they're overhauling it and, you know, making sure that, hey, we're gonna make this feel the best we can possibly through the hitboxes and hurtboxes, that's gonna be the thing that fully gets me in, right? And like, yeah, it's, you know, multiverses with each update that we've been getting has been doing such a great job of turning me into a believer as somebody who was not a believer before, right? Like I was like, cool, it seems like a game. It seems like a Smash clone. Smash clones usually come and go. All right, well, we'll see how this thing does. They've been responsive in getting updates out, in nerfing Bugs Bunny and buffing all the other characters, right? And making sure that this is a game that's going to be viable as an ongoing fighting game that wants to live and wants to survive in the future, right? And so good on you, multiverses.
Hell yeah, man. I'm rooting for them. Seems like they're making the right moves now. I love that Evo's this weekend. Really excited to see what comes from that. Definitely going to be tuning in myself. I imagine we'll get some multiverses announcements. Definitely some characters, right?
Oh, yeah. Do you have any requests? What one new character do you think we'll get this weekend?
I think that they'd focus probably less on the gimmicky things and more on things that just make sense. It being Evo, I imagine they're going to focus more on fighting game characters. I wouldn't be surprised if we got a Mortal Kombat character announced. Because that seems to be a weird omission so far. So I wouldn't be surprised if they got
I forget
Scorpion or Sub-Zero.
I forget what podcast I was listening to this week, but someone had the great suggestion of like leaning into the Cartoon Network and like Adult Swim stuff of like Space Ghost. Like that would like getting like more characters from like the Rick and Morty like stuff that would be really, really fun.
Give me the main character from Megas XLR in his mech.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the fun thing is, like, I think that with where multiverses is right now, it probably makes most sense to have Mortal Kombat characters. But at Evo, anything can happen. Like, I remember that's where they announced the Ninja Turtles were coming to was it Injustice or Mortal Kombat? I don't remember which one, but
it would have been Injustice.
Yeah, so it's like that's weird as shit. So who the hell knows? Barbara Streisand, why not put her in?
I would. It's probably not a popular take, but if they're to add in Mortal Kombat characters, I would like to see them do something like weird and interesting. Because we've seen Mortal Kombat characters be put into like games like Injustice, right? Like we know how Mortal Kombat characters should feel in play. If they were like, yo, let's get fucking weird. Let's make it a duo character and you have it be a Scorpion Sub-Zero situation where you're tag teaming or something weird and different like that. I think this could be the opportunity to do that because Multiverses is a weird and different game. And I would be down for just a Scorpion, right? With a Scorpion moveset and all that stuff. And I'm sure plenty of people would. But I don't know, man. I think you have possibilities to like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. What if it was Katana and Melina as a team up duo or some weird Noob Smoke, some weird shit like that, I think could be fun and cool.
Yeah. Before we move on to the next story, I just want to reiterate that Multiverses is going to go down in history as the greatest video game title of all time. So
1,000%.
Congratulations. Whoever
that came up and that. What was the one from yesterday? Meet Your Maker. I'm still a big fan of Meet Your Maker.
Pretty good. Really, but Multiverses good. Is just
it's perfect.
Story number 6, new Sonic Origins update finally fixes Tails AI issues, once again from Jordan Midler at VGC, and thank God.
Yep.
Thank God. A new update for Sonic Mania is Sonic Origins.
Oh, that's story Jordan Midler. Wrong.
Not me. A new update for Sonic Origins is currently in the process of rolling out a little spin dash action with PlayStation players having received the update earlier today. The patch notes for the update are small, with only two items on the list giving explicit descriptions of what's being fixed. But one issue, that being Tails disappearing off screen during hectic moments of gameplay in Sonic 2, will likely be appreciated by players like Blessing. The patch notes are corrected track mismatches in the museum for certain music tracks included in the classic music pack, fix an issue in Sonic 2 where Tails goes off screen and is unable to rejoin, and additional bug fixes. You were having issues with this, right?
Yeah, this was my biggest biggest experience with bugs. Or I guess the bug I had the most experience with out of the Sonic Origins collection. You know, I know people have talked about other things, right? The main thing I experienced was Tails just constantly just getting stuck on objects and not being able to follow me throughout levels. And so I just hear him off screen bouncing over and over and over again as I'm making my way through a level. And then I finish that level, get into the next level, and it happens all over again. Extremely annoying. And this is one of those ones where, you know, better late than never, but never late is better. You know, I don't plan to go back to Sonic 2 anytime soon. I just played it. So like, this isn't really going to affect me. I already went through the process, but good for people who might pick up Sonic Origins later, or people who might be waiting on bug fixes to then get into Sonic Origins. Like, this is going to be good for y'all. And so good on them for getting around to it and fixing it.
Absolutely. Story number 7, EA has removed incest from...
Tim, I swear this is the actual story. I didn't mess with you on this one.
EA has removed incest from The Sims 4, which was accidentally... All right. Serious news time.
EA, I didn't know if I should have warned you about this one. I felt like warning you, but I was like, actually, I want to see this in real time.
EA has removed incest from The Sims 4, which was accidentally added to the game last week. This comes from Zach Zwizen at Kotaku. Earlier this week, The Sims 4 received a big free update that added curved walls, body hair, and new wants and fears. It also seemed to have accidentally added incestual relationships. As spotted by PC Gamer, Reddit, and elsewhere, Sims 4 players are reporting that after the game's July 26 update, some in-game characters are looking to date family members. One player shared a screenshot of an older woman who suddenly wanted to start a romantic relationship with her own son. She went to put some laundry in the washing machine, and as she bent over... No, I added that part. Another player shared a bug report with EA stating that one of their male Sims wanted to ask his twin sister to be his girlfriend. In the same support thread, a player on Xbox shared an off-putting example of a daughter wanting to date her father. Yikes. What's going on here? Well, according to some Sims 4 players and modders, the likely issue is the newly added want system, which was seen in older Sims games. The system gives Sims things they want to do and accomplish, giving players more goals to chase. However, it seems that a bug with the system is creating wants that involve romantic relationships with anybody, including other family members. Once again, yikes. This latest Sims 4 patch released on August 2nd has fixed the incest bug that was accidentally added to the game via a free July 26th update. According to new patch notes, Sims will now only want to date appropriate people instead of their dad or sister. It also fixed the issue of characters rapidly aging after being created.
Oh, brother.
Oh, my God. That is... so fucking funny.
Dude, I legitimately, last night as I was scrolling through Twitter, I saw a story pop up and legitimately cracked up. Could not stop laughing at it. This is incredible. Wow. This is art. Mm-hmm. Good on you. Good on EA for being quick about it. But yeah, this is great. I don't have any words.
I don't have any words, man. It is. You know, the wants, the desires. They're out there, everybody. They're out there. Well, incest isn't cool now. No. But will it be one day, bless?
10 years.
I don't know. 10 years is so far away. If I wanted to know what's coming to Mom and Grub Shops today, where would I look?
You look at the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah.
Out today. We got Recipe for Disaster on PC. We have Amazing Bomberman on mobile. We have Paper Please on mobile. Gigabash on PS5, PS4, and PC. Retreat to Enon on PC. And Everspace 2's Drake Gang Wars update just released on Steam and GOG. Cool. Some new dates for you. Shin-chan, Me and the Professor on Summer Vacation, The Endless 7-Day Journey, is coming to Nintendo Switch on August 11th. Coming to PS4, Steam, and Epic Games soon after that. The Kirby 30th Anniversary Concert will be streamed online next week on August 11th. Oh, fucking K. Let's go, dude. Yeah.
You excited
for that? Oh, hell yeah, man. I hope it's as good as the Sonic one, because still listen to that all the time. Dude, here's the thing. Obviously, Sonic, banger soundtracks. Kirby. banger soundtracks. Do you not remember what you just played with the Forgotten Land?
I mean, here's here's my thing, right? When it comes to these anniversary orchestras, part of what gets me so hyped for them is the nostalgia that I have for so many of these songs. And for Sonic, right? Like, the Sonic soundtracks, if you're a fan, are all iconic. And so, like, moment to moment, that shit hit for me. Where for Kirby, like, Forgotten Land, I fucking love the soundtrack. And then the Kirby songs that appeared in, that usually appear in Smash Brothers, those are the ones that I have a connection with. But I worry, right? I'm sure the orchestra is going to be great, but am I going to have the same connection, right? Am I going to pop off for the deep Kirby cuts? I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think you'd be surprised at how much you're familiar with that you just don't really realize. No, mainly because of Smash. Like, there are so many Smash songs that you're like, oh yeah, I definitely know that shit. But I'm very excited about that. Should be pretty damn cool. Let's see, where are we at now? You know what? Let's just go straight to You're Wrong. You can go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Let us know what we get wrong as we screw it up in the show. Nanobiologist says, Beyond Good and Evil 2 was teased by Ubisoft during Ubi Days in 2008. It was not revealed at E3. Where was that trailer, though? I swear that must have been E3.
Was that Ubi Days?
Huh. I don't know. I also don't know what the hell Ubi Days is. So maybe
I was gonna say, I've never heard of Ubi Days in my life.
Bandar SN.
Happy Days.
Yeah, there we go. Bandar SN says EA's indie published titles are called EA Originals.
Thank you.
That was That's it. We got everything else right because we're such smart boys.
It's me and you, the smart boys. That's what they call us, Tim.
That's what they call us. Tim and Bless. Smart boys, baby. We're about to do the Patreon exclusive post show, which is very exciting because today we're doing a shit list, the 10 best Rockstar video games of all time.
Oh, I'm sad, sir. I'm missing that one. Bless. If Bully is not on there, you need to slack me and I'm going to start rioting in my own house.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm also excited for this one because this is one that Tim's going to lead. I've not looked at the list at all. Okay. And so I'm excited to be kind of in the passenger seat this time around for shit list.
Yeah, remember, if you want to get this Patreon exclusive post show where we do the shit list, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Sign up there at the silver member or above. You'll be able to listen to that later today. But for everyone else, we're about to do a super cool Twitch stream. They're about to play a little WWE 2K 2022. And then Fortnite, baby. A whole bunch of kind of funny people going to be popping on, playing some Fortnite, getting some soggy 90s, doing some soggy 90s. I'm not exactly sure the verbiage of the soggy 90s.
Performing?
Performing?
Yeah, I think they're the you perform.
Mm-hmm. The 90s will be soggy, everybody. But until next time, I love you.